You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Palomita, palomita, que vagas por la ciudad. Pediles a mis hermanos de la pena y la maldad que se vive acá en el norte.
From Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, we'll feature an interview with Culture Clash founder Richard Montoya on the expanding LA sweeps currently creating fear and anguish in the brown communities across Southern Cal. Also, Dick Becker of the International Action Center reflects on the Putin-Trump summit on the Ukraine war. Also, straight ahead, we'll speak to Code Pink. They're going after the New York Times in Gaza. And, well, we got a lot more for you. Stay tuned.
Que se viva en el norte. Si vienen a trabajar.
Are back in the mothership, as my brother to the right, but he's really to the left, Miguel Gabilon Molina, says, the mothership KPFA in Berkeley, California. We're happy to be back. We got a big show for you, and we're honored to begin this show with Richard Montoya, founder of Culture Clash and much more. He's in Southern California, where the cops, where the soldiers are doing their sweeps, trying to terrorize brown communities across the south of California. And we welcome him to the airwaves now. Richard Montoya, welcome back to Flashpoints. It is good to have you with us again.
Dennis Bernstein!
Making fun of me, huh? Richard, good to have you back.
I like your lead-in.
Thank you. Well, we're going to be seeing you up here soon, and that's exciting. But first, let's start with the hometown, Southern California. The troops were out surrounding Governor Newsom last night. They wanted, I guess, send some kind of message. They were also doing their roundups. Give us your response. What's going on? We're seeing more and more of these troops armed, masked, on the ground. What's going on?
Well, Dennis, I'll start by telling you about a march, a memorial today that happened in Monrovia, California, east of the city. A gentleman, a day laborer, saw the ICE trucks coming into the Home Depot parking lot. He fled. He ran out of fear for his life. He, as a pedestrian, he got himself on the 210 freeway where he was struck by a SUV and killed. So wow. People gathered today to honor him, and that a stark reminder that stupid cat and mouse game is deadly, and we're seeing our neighborhoods continue to just, you know, be inundated by masked, huge biceps, bulky men with long rifles in our neighborhoods.
Richard, could you adjust your... Richard, we're having a hard time. You're coming in and out. Could you adjust a little bit to see if we can get a bit of sound? Sorry about that.
Is it the volume or am I just cutting out?
Cutting out.
Oh, I'm on the freeway. Let me pull over.
Okay.
See if I can find some higher ground. I'm very sorry.
Please, not a problem. And
you're good now.
All right, let's give it another shot again. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilán Molina, and we are joined by Richard Montoya of Culture Clash. Are you there, Richard?
I was on the 5 freeway and cutting out. Now I'm on the 10 freeway, and it looks like I'm doing a little bit better in the Barrio freeway. Thank God.
Well, centered.
Hey, Dennis, can you hear me okay?
Yes, let's give it a shot.
Oh, it's good. It's good to have you. Go ahead, compadre.
Hey, Molina.
Just real quickly, I know that school is on up in the area, up here, school, you know, children, kids are going back to school. I know down there they're getting ready to go back to school or started. How is that, hombre? Because I know that there's a lot of families that are keeping their children at home. They're afraid to take them to school, to drop them off, because as we've seen, ICE doesn't care whether it's a school, a church, a playground, a parking lot. They just don't care. There's no boundaries for these SS troops. But that said, are you getting a sense of what the feeling is? Because some of the schools are predominantly, especially in East Los Angeles, predominantly, you know, indigenous Latino children, kids. And with parents keeping their children at home because they're afraid that they might get taken away and their children disappeared. Are you getting any sense of that? Or what are you hearing from others that are concerned about the returning back to school and the possible raids?
Well, compadre Miguel, as you know, your goddaughter Luna is in first grade now, and she's on her second day of LAUSD elementary school today. I pick her up as soon as I'm done with you and Mr. Bernstein. I'm at the school, and so we're watching carefully the mood, the anxiety, the fear. And I'd have to say LAUSD and the principals, the superintendents, and the teachers are all hands on deck and trying to do everything possible to make students and vulnerable parents to provide that safe zone, that safety zone. Never has it been more important than now. And so far at our little you know, very Chicanito elementary school with Mandarin instruction and, you know, 99.9% Chicano and Chinese school here in Monterey Park on the east side of L.A., there has not been a single incident in the county of Los Angeles where we are at. I can't say that across the entire district, but we've been watching. The teachers are walkie-talkied up. Anything that they see, they can report. And for the moment, Miguel, we have a strange bedfellow with a L.A. County Sheriff, Latino elected L.A. County Sheriff, who is not cooperating with ICE. So at least we can count some margin of victory that this particular sheriff and his deputies are not cooperation with ICE. That has not been the case across the board, but we're holding this sheriff's feet to the fire, and they're not sharing information.
Well, that's
fighting security or running escort or any of that nonsense, and that's important because if the children have to get locked down in the auditorium or not releasing kids till the sun goes down, all those options are in play right now. It's a bit of a war zone, man. You know that.
Yeah. It is a war zone, and unfortunately, it's going to get worse. But that said, I just wanted to mention that up here in the north, in Sonoma County, the gateway to the wine country and also the cannabis magical green fields, there's been a lot of issues. In Sonoma County last week, there was a hunger strike by different groups around the ILAS program, and also the North Bay Organizing Project came out and different faith leaders came out and did a hunger strike to get the sheriff to, you know, because the sheriff up in Sonoma County thinks he's still in the Wild Wild West. And to this point, he's been cooperating with ICE. So there's a tremendous pressure. And I think that folks listening to the broadcast today up in the North Bay, up in the North Coast, will get encouraged by hearing that one of the most populated areas in the state, which is Los Angeles, Southern California, they've gotten the cooperation of the sheriff. And hopefully they'll send a single out to others, other sheriffs throughout, that this is, they serve the people. They don't serve the federal government. They don't serve the king. They serve the people. And hopefully this will send a good message and encourage the Sonoma County Sheriff to finally say, I will serve the people. I'm not going to serve a king. So that's good news. That's good and a hopeful, you know, action on your part.
Ain't no king. Gracias, Richard. Thank you for joining us. Francisco Herrera here with you, and thanks for that report. We're hearing also that across the entire school district and other parts of other districts in Los Angeles, people, community and school district folks have really come together to form these safety zones. What can you tell us a little bit about the larger scene there in that aspect of community and school district folks coming together to create safety zones?
It's very impressive, and it gives us a measure of hope that we hadn't forgotten our community organizing, and that we can click in. And there's young people with walkie-talkies, and then there's people on motorcycles, there's people on e-scooters, and the word in the barrio is still faster than the internet, man. And you can find out what's happening corner to corner, what's Simone. Happening. And we've been flooding the zone and berating and asking ICE officers, particularly ICE officers of color, what are you doing? Take your mask off. Where did you train? What are your credentials? What do your lanyards mean? What is your badge? What badge number do you have? And really, and so I know that we've affected the morale of ICE officers and really trying to speak to them directly in the streets. And then in MacArthur Park, there were different sets of Crip and Blood, former Crip and Blood gang members who showed up at MacArthur Park to tell us that we're bringing the wrong things to a street brawl. And in no uncertain terms, the young brothers I heard speaking were like, we're prepared to back you up. We're standing right behind you. You tell us what you want us to do, because and one gentleman, a black gentleman, spoke, you know, of his half Latino, half black, you know, son, and what he's trying to teach him to be and to stand up and to question authority. So, you know, we have actually seen former gang members come back into the barrio to in a sense educate us and tell us what's necessary for this battle, what to do, get our bodies ready, get prepared to mobilize, to move. You know, this is not a Clinton Obama battle. There's no high road here. There is no high road. And to that regard, I think the Latino Hispanic elected officials are really confusing the crap out of us or people. And we may just have to go this without our quote unquote leadership. They're fearful. They're afraid. They're ducking. They're covering. And in the meantime, you know, people are dying in the parking lots of Home Depot. They're dying on the freeways. They're dying fleeing in fear for their lives. You know, children are being terrorized, handcuffed, zip tied. As Miguel said, you know, in the courts and the schools and the hospitals. And this is a shameless Stephen Miller battle. And I'd have to say on some corners, we're actually winning the battle. I wouldn't want to get overly confident, but I think that I I think there's something right now, we have to listen to the former gang members. You know, we have to listen to different strategies. This is not going to be Juan trying to talk sense to MAGA, trying to talk sense to long rifles, trying to talk sense to people that want to disappear us and eradicate us. And
yes,
so this feels really personal.
Yeah.
And even though I might be a U.S. citizen, I never know when that little knock on the window is going to happen. You know,
that's right.
But I'm trying to look out for people on the streets, the different vendors, the people that are cleaning homes. Anywhere we can provide a cover or some sense of safety, that's our responsibility to do that.
We're speaking with Richard Montoya of Culture Clash. In the studio with us is Aaron Miguel Gavila Molina, Francisco Herrera. Richard, I want to ask you two things here. You say it looks like you're winning on the street corner. What does that look like? And also, because we lost you right at the beginning, remind us again what happened in terms of the guy who was fleeing and got killed. Do we know his name?
It happened in the township of Monrovia, California, just about 20 miles east of Los Angeles on the 210 freeway. We can Google the gentleman's name. By the time I'm done, I'm sure we could figure out his name. But he was a day laborer looking for work at the Home Depot in Monrovia when ICE patrols came through. He'd seen what had been happening. He was fearful for his family, for his life. He fled. They claimed they weren't pursuing him, but he fled. He'd seen what had happened in the days leading up. He somehow, as a pedestrian, got on the 210 freeway where he was struck by a vehicle and died. So his memorial was today in Monrovia. People gathered. Even other day laborers gathered and community organizers gathered and, you know, had their vigil to pay their respects to this man who lost his life. We have heart attacks that are happening. We have people that are disappeared. We have children alone at home. It feels really, really vulnerable, man. And even though my family may not be in immediate danger, that's not the point. Other families are
that's
in
right.
immediate danger. So the corners, the neighborhoods are alive. We're reporting. We're talking to each other. You can get an alert.
That's right.
His name, by the way, just we have found out, is Carlos Roberto Montoya. He was 52 years old from Guatemala. A lot of people, I'm sure, are going to miss him. We're very troubled because, as you say, Richard, this is something that is happening all the time. Other thoughts? What does it mean to be winning? How do we know if we're winning a little bit on this battle to restrain the emerging police state?
Well, thank you for saying his name. It's important, you know. I didn't know that we shared a name, Montoya.
Yeah, right there.
We drive by the Guatemalan embassy daily, and you just see the desperation on people that are lined up out there for help, for assistance, for anything they can get from their embassy. And L.A. is a collection of embassies. You know, there's almost one for every Latin American country in Mexico here. So. How we know that there are little mini triumphs in the day, in the long day, is when masses of ICE trucks recede and disappear and flee the scene, and when they are shamed and confronted and so we've seen truck after truck after truck leave certain areas, not all areas, doesn't happen everywhere, but we have seen the morale decline and ICE officers just packing up and moving out. But you know, they're moved to some other neighborhood, you know, where they're will be less resistance. But there's been a lot of talk about resistance right now and keeping it up, and people from the motorcycle riders, the gas bicyclists, the e-scooters. The other day we saw over 100 dirt bike kids completely routing ICE and police officials. Like they take over an intersection, and so nothing can pass until hundreds of motorcycles have passed. And there's just something really clever and beautiful, and it says that folks are exercising resistance on many different levels and many different capacities, and even many different economic areas. You know, we see a lot of Anglo allies that are out there working with us, from neighborhoods, affluent neighborhoods in San Diego to Silver Lake and Echo Park and places here in Los Angeles, where, you know, people are just they've had enough, and they're you know, so those I don't want to paint a picture that we're, you know, have won the battle, but they're little mini wars that we can win with those things that we've learned from our political movements, you know. So those can be counted as mini victories, at least.
That is so correct. Any little, you know, advancement we make to push back this, you know, emerging military police state is really crucial. But one thing I know, and you mentioned it, Richard, and that's that, you know, ICE has been kind of retreating and disappearing. Well, they've been retreating and they've reappeared up here in the north in Oakland. You know, they landed, Oakland right now is being occupied by National Guards. And, you know, I saw where the current mayor, Barbara Lee, was really distraught. And you know, with that said, it looks like it's spreading. And one of the things that I've had conversations with Dennis and Francisco Herrera, and that's that, you know, when they drop troops, I'm not talking National Guard, but Marines, that's a declaration of war, that they're here to war into the communities. And I know everywhere people are really kind of shaken, and there's a fear, but there's also a big pushback in numbers, their safety, and more people that are non-indigenous, non-Latino, you know, are becoming to realize that the battle that's been waged against us, we've been made the targets, we've been called the enemy within. It's just a facade. For the current dictator to send armed troops into different areas. And most of the areas that have been targeted by the administration are blue states and blue cities. Well, folks that are non-Latino, non-indigenous are coming out. I know up here in the north, there's a group that's doing a thing called a blackout, and they're targeted Labor Day to shut it down. And it's something that I've been hearing a lot, is that the courts are ineffective. The courts just offer temporary obstacles or to slow down the wrecking ball, slow down the train that's out to destroy this society under the current administration. And people are beginning to wake up and say, hey, this is going to affect the so-called middle-class American lifestyle. So there is hope in the massive pushback. I know people are talking about Labor Day as being a general strike. And that's something that people need to start talking about and pushing that, because there's been a declaration of war, and the current administration is setting up shock troops, are setting up military units for urban warfare. And that's something that happened here years back when Jerry Brown was the mayor of Oakland. Willie Brown, who was the mayor at that time of San Francisco, refused to take government, federal Pentagon monies. But Jerry Brown, Mr. Teresa disciple, Sister Teresa, took the money and he allowed the military to come in. And they did come in. And in one day, they completely, in a 4-hour span from 4 in the morning, a.m. to 8 p.m., excuse me, a.m. in the morning, they completely had taken over Oakland. So now they're back. And now it's like everybody's holding their breath, but there's all this pushback.
And, Richard, we know we have to let you go now, but we're looking forward. You're going to be coming up here soon to be doing some performing. You want to just let us know when you're going to be here, what you're up to?
We're going to be at the Magic Theater August 29th and 30th with Cherry Garcia in the Lower Mission. There has been a lot of Grateful Dead activity at Golden Gate Park, and August is a big month. They call the days between when Jerry was born and when he passed. And in honor of Jerry Garcia and his family, we're doing a brand new play with live music. The great David Gans from Oakland is going to be joining us. David's got KPFA Bonafides in his background, Joshua, Raul Brody, and some terrific actors are going to be joining me on stage live, 8 o'clock shows, Friday and Saturday, August 29th and 30th at the Magic Theater at beautiful Fort Mason. Jerry Garcia in the Lower Mission, live on stage.
Beautiful. As always, we appreciate you, Richard Montoya. Always a treat to have you with us. We wish times were better, but it's always a little bit better when you join us.
Thank you, Dennis, and I appreciate that too, man. You and my compadre bring a modicum of comfort to us. Thank you so much.
All right,
talk
be
to you
safe.
Next week, I hope.
Si se puede. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilán Molina and our good brother Francisco Herrera, our troubadour in residence.
Don't let your heart be broken. Time to organize and focus. Time for families together.
Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Burns, and I'm here with also Miguel Gavila Molina. We've got a lot more for you, but we're going to take a quick report from our good brother Richard Becker of the International Action Center. The whole world has been watching what's going on in terms of Alaska and the war between Putin and Russia and Ukraine. Dick Becker, International Action Center. Dick, you've been watching this for a long time unfold. Give us a thumbnail sketch of what you understand in terms of the what happened today and where this seems to be going.
Well, Dennis, let me say first, for many years I was with the International Action Center, but now I'm representing the ANSWER, Act Now to Stop War and Racism Coalition. There's something about U.S. U.S. diplomacy. This made me think of the meeting 25 years ago in Dayton, Ohio. There was just a protest there a little while ago when NATO came back to have a meeting celebrating that 25th anniversary. And that was the agreement that was supposedly going to end the war in the former Yugoslavia. And they held it inside a military base. And they had actually a reception right next to the fighter bombers. And today you see this event that took place, very short event, actually. and there's Putin, and there's Trump, and they're shaking hands, and the B-2 stealth bombers are flying over above them. I guess this is, you're supposed to be reminded of who is the number one military power in the world. But I don't think that's going to make very much of an impression on Putin, and it's a different thing than dealing with a small country. Russia is a very big country, and Russia is, of course, a country that has gone through great changes. And I think that what we're seeing today, and if you read the early news reports on this meeting went on for about 3 hours, and then there was a press conference afterwards, and nothing was really announced that had happened. But you see this happening at a time when there's a great deal of tension, when there's a war that's raging right now inside of Ukraine that's going on, and they come away with nothing. And at least anything that we can see, we have to wait a little bit because we can't know for sure. But we have to see this as a continuation of what's happened since the fall of the Soviet Union. The wars, the two wars in Iraq, the destruction of Libya, the destruction of Syria, the wars that have taken place in so much of the world, and the conflicts that have taken place and the breakup of countries. This is really a continuation of the aftermath of the fall of the Soviet Union. And what it meant, it was hailed by many people, including many people on the left, as, oh, this is a great step forward for democracy and so forth. That's not what happened. And, in Ukraine in particular, the U.S. put a lot of money into bringing in the countries that had been the allies of the Soviet Union and countries from within the Soviet Union, bringing them into the NATO alliance. So the NATO alliance doubled in size. And the Ukraine was the last of the countries in Europe, the significant countries in Europe bordering Russia after the breakup of the Soviet Union, that entered into a period of instability after the fall of the Soviet Union and intensified in 2014. And that's how we should really look at this war. This is a war that began not 3.5 years ago, but began in 2014. And it was a war that the U.S. has supported, the one side, particularly in the last 3.5 years, with billions and billions of dollars of weaponry and other kinds of support, and gotten its NATO allies to do the same in order to bring Ukraine into NATO to complete the encirclement of Western Russia in a way that would make it really impossible for Russia to defend itself. If Ukraine had come into, and I say this, I should first say, I think it's a real tragedy that what's going on, the fighting between two countries that were part of the same country, and with all that's happening. But we have to understand where the war came from. And where the war came from was really a refusal in 2013 and 2014, when the U.S. was pouring money into the opposition inside Ukraine, that when it was doing that, it was also refusing repeated attempts by Russia to negotiate with the U.S. This was the Biden administration. That was the Obama administration. And the whole staff of the foreign policy team that came from the Hillary Clinton period as Secretary of State. And they took this position that they didn't have to negotiate. So the military buildup was going on. Russia was saying it was unacceptable for Ukraine to enter into NATO, but that would have meant that would have been a fatal encirclement of Russia. And I remember in the fall and winter of 2013-2014, we were wondering, my associates, the people I work with and myself, we were saying, why is it that that Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, and Blinken, the Secretary of State, why do they keep saying, oh, we're prepared for anything, we're not going to negotiate? And they knew that, or believed that, they were going to force a war, or they were going to force Russia to accept Ukraine being in NATO, which, as I said, would be such a grave threat to Russia. So they refused negotiation. And so we've seen that they were willing to go to war. We didn't really even believe that. And I think you might have felt the same way, Dennis, at that time. That were they really going to go to, were they really going to really let it go all the way to war? And they did. And then the war began. And the war has continued, really, in the eastern part of Ukraine, where much of the eastern part of Ukraine withdrew from Ukraine because of the outcome of the coup of 2014 that brought fascist elements into the government. They didn't stay in the government long, but they were fascist elements and caused that withdrawal of the Donbass and other regions of Ukraine from the Ukraine. And that started a war in which 14 or 15,000 people died between 2014 and 2022. And in 2022, we had the war that we're seeing today. It's important to know this history, to know, as opposed to the presentation that we get through all of the mainstream media in the West, in the U.S. in particular, that presents this as an unprovoked war. It's not an unprovoked war. It's a tragic war. But the West, and particularly the U.S. and its NATO allies, bear the greatest responsibility for the war that's come about. We want to see it end. Everyone, I think, who stands for peace and against war wants to see it end. We don't know, as I said, that it doesn't appear anything of great significance came out of the talks that took place today. They were curtailed. The parties apparently departed. Trump said they made great progress, but without explaining even one aspect of that.
I cannot believe, and I hate to sort of mention his name, but most of the discussion, long discussions about are Trump's actions going to lead to him being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, nobody loves to love Trump, nobody that I know, but that's about the stupidest discussion I've ever heard. It sort of reminds me of what Billie Holiday used to say, I have to smile to keep from throwing up. What clue would you look for in terms of a real ending of this war? How might it end in some way fairly and not lead to still another war?
Well, you know, I don't know. It appears that there has to be, you know, that the eastern part of Ukraine is not going to be remain as part of Ukraine at the end of this. Either they will become independent, they've proclaimed themselves as People's Republics in the eastern part of the country. And there's also Crimea, which went back to Russian control. It had been, it had only been since 1954 that it was part of Ukraine. And that was a time when Ukraine and Russia were, as I said, they were part of the Soviet Union. It doesn't appear that that will continue, given the military situation on the ground now. But I think it's and we really can't say, we really do not know what took place inside these talks. I mean, the only thing you can think, if the talks are very short and only 3 hours, and they were predicted to go, you know, 6 or 7 hours, and that they did not make any announcement in the final press conference of anything that substantive. So we don't really know. As I have to emphasize that we don't know, because there may be other things that are taking place, or other developments or negotiations that are taking place that didn't necessarily have to go through Anchorage, Alaska. I'm glad to say that the Answer Coalition had a demonstration today in Anchorage protesting against Trump and against the rule of the billionaires and all that Trump is doing that's threatening the world. One thing that would, and the people in the United States, one thing that would be very, very good that could come out of negotiations would be to continue the START treaty, the START nuclear treaty. Those treaties that's the last one that exists between the U.S. and Russia. The U.S. broke the another one of the treaties, the intermediate treaty in 2019 when Trump was in office the first time. Those are, you know, those treaties, they're not the salvation, but those treaties are important because, you know, any kind of a nuclear aspect use of nuclear weapons of any type, you know, would probably lead to the end for all of us. So that hasn't been emphasized very much, but it has been brought up as a possible element in the negotiations that are going on. Nobel Peace Prize, well, you know, Obama got it as soon as he got into office. I guess that was supposed to encourage him, didn't do much good. And the idea of Trump getting the Nobel Prize is just, you know, well, that makes the Nobel what it is.
Okay. That's Richard Becker, Answer Coalition. As always, Dick, we appreciate the good information and the sane explanation of what's going on the ground in Alaska today. Thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us on Flashpoints today.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
You're absolutely welcome. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Coming up later on in this broadcast, we're going to be talking to Code Pink, our good friend Cynthia Papermaster. But first, in the studio is my good brother, the troubadour, the resident troubadour here at Flashpoints, Francisco Herrera. And he's got a special guest. Take it away, Francisco.
Thank you, Dennis. And I'm really happy to have here with me and my good brother, Lou Aya of the Peace Poets. And actually, just like Richard gave us a report from LA, he's just coming from San Antonio, where we're experiencing another facet of the war on the people. Welcome here. Welcome, Lou Aya. And I'm very proud and happy to have you here with us. What a wonderful surprise that you got here today. So, bienvenido.
Gracias, Francisco. Saludo, mi gente. Peace and blessings, family. It's good to be here, to be able to speak on a truth that the system is trying to hide, particularly the disappearance and kidnapping of so many of our relatives. I want to speak the name of someone who's so important to me, someone who I love so much. A dear friend of mine, Cata Xochitl Santiago, was just trying to get on an airplane to go to work in another city. And with her DACA work permit, two ICE agents approached her and detained her. And she's still detained by ICE. And right now, if you want to support her cause, I'm inviting you to just go to freekata.com, where you can sign a petition. And we're putting out a prayer, please, for her and her family and every single family being separated by ICE right now. And because I want to be able to speak about that as a poet, as an artist, I'm from the Peace Poets, and what we do right now is actually speak directly to you, to the listeners, to invite you to continue to fight for freedom, but not the way that they fight. We need to fight like we're free in our spirit. We need to fight like we're free to love, free to hold each other, free to cry, free to sing. And so I want to do a poem. And this particular piece, I really feel the presence of every single person in Gaza who's loving their family and finding a way to survive. I feel the presence of the people who shut down the world headquarters of Wells Fargo earlier today for the land, for the water, for the people. And with this piece right here, this is a prayer for you who can hear our voices, to continue to fight like you're free. It goes like this. We need to cry, and we need to mourn, and then we need to think. Oh, hell no. We were born to be free. Free. Feel that. Free. Free like a drum beat picking you up. Free like kids when they dance with bliss. Free like your lips when you lost in a kiss. Free like your dreams when you're deep in your sleep. If you feel that, you know what I mean. Free like go ahead, take these words. Free like a big woman feeling her curves. Free like a trans femme feeling they worse. Free like a long day getting out of work. That's right, we were born to be free. Free like a grandma's hug. Free like the air in your lungs. Like a first grade class who could really care less if they fail or pass. Free like that and free like this. Free like your eyes closed making this wish to be free like spirit, like no more chains. Free like freedom, not playing no games. Free like we like speaking love fluent. When everybody like, no, he ain't gonna do it, she ain't gonna do it, they ain't gonna do it, then you do it. I mean free like that, hell yeah. I mean free like that. Free like officials who resist these orders of hate. Cause I can hear Dr. King saying freedom can't wait, freedom can't wait, freedom can't wait. And ain't no real freedom ever gonna be attained by a policy that leaves our people detained. And you cannot claim freedom for just one kind of people. And you cannot claim freedom on just one side of a wall. So when a government of hate tries to make our freedom seem small, we retake the streets and remind the world the only freedom we seek is freedom for us all. That's right. So wherever you at, you can sing this with us right now. We gonna sing, Don't Let Your Heart Be Hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. Cause we need our families present. Dignity, not detention. Here go. Don't let your heart be hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. We need our families present. Dignity, not detention. Don't let your heart be hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. We need our families present. Dignity, not detention. Wherever you at, sing it with us. Don't let your heart be hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. We need our family present. Dignity, not detention. For all our children, sing. Don't let your heart be hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. We need our family present. Dignity, not detention. Like you mean it, we sing. Don't let your heart be hopeless. It's time to organize and focus. We need our families present. Dignity, not detention. Say dignity, not detention. Dignity, not detention. In Los Angeles, dignity, not detention. In New York and Florida, dignity, not detention. In Texas, dignity, not detention. Across Turtle Island, dignity, not detention. Por todos los pueblos, dignity, not detention. Two more times, let them know, dignity, not detention. We said, dignity, not detention.
ocean.
Wow. Gracias. Guess what? You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Thank you for that beautiful presentation. What an honor it is. This is, you know, I don't want to die, but if I died right now, I would die joyous and happy because we gave something to the people, which is called hope.
Yes.
And hope retrieves the soul. So we are delighted. And of course, we're not going to end this show. We've got one more segment. But let's take a little bit of a musical break. And then we're going to bring in our good friend, Cynthia Papermaster, who's got a few words to say about CBS and the New York Times. Stay with us.
Saliendo nuevo sol, ya se ve la luz del día. Y enraizamos con la fuerza de la madre que nos cuida. Aunque vengan vientos fuertes, nos estamos asomando para dar tremendos frutos que hoy estamos cultivando. Pues ya viene la cosecha, por eso estamos cantando.
Points, KPFA Pacifica Radio, broadcasting from the mothership, and we are proud to welcome back to our airwaves San Francisco Code Pink in the form of Cynthia Papermaster. Cynthia, you've been keeping an eye on CBS and the New York Times. Tell us what you got.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Dennis. I'm just learning about a situation that we should all be aware of and take action around, which is that Larry Ellison's son, David, is purchasing CBS News and inviting Barry Weiss to be a consultant on the news and a commentator, perhaps, on the news. And I just want to tell you a little bit about her, because I'm just learning about this myself, and it's pretty eye-opening. So here's what she said in 1921 in her media outlet called The Free Press. Hamas and Islamic Jihad are genocidal terrorist organizations that want to wipe Israel, a country the size of New Jersey that contains the largest Jewish community on earth, off the map. That is their reason for being. And she is a liar. Number one, I'm going to say that. That's on me to say that. That's an obvious lie. That is not actually what's reality at all. And she's a warmonger. She's really fanning the flames of hatred with that statement. Because I know a lot of Palestinian people in my work with Code Pink, and I haven't met a single one who's anti-Semitic. And they're a Semitic people. So it doesn't make any sense to that's not their purpose at all. They're governing Gaza. They were elected to do that. So that is not their only reason for being at all. So she's also saying that the starvation in Gaza is a myth. I just want to read a little quote here to say how crazy and what a big lie that is, if I may. The Free Press declared the idea that Israel was engineering a man-made famine that was underway in Gaza a myth, even as Israel was in its third month of blocking all food, fuel, and medicine into the territory, and at least 87 civilians had already starved to death, most of them children. As recently as this past Sunday, another Free Press article, that's her media outlet, Free Press, argued that there isn't mass starvation, as claimed by pro-Hamas propaganda, which flies in the face of not just basic reality, but testimony from doctors, major news organizations, with journalists on the ground, and even the conclusion of President Donald Trump, a supporter of the war. So her lies, and then she's going to be with CBS News. Mm-hmm. And Code Pink doesn't like the sound of that at all, because she's going to have a bigger platform than she has now. So we're going to go to CBS News in San Francisco Thursday, a week from this coming Thursday. Check out codepink.org for information about all the events we do. We're in constant motion, and we're just going to confront CBS about that. We don't want this. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia Papermaster, Code Pink. We love Code Pink. We appreciate your presence coming down to the studio, the mothership here in Berkeley, KPFA, Pacifica Radio. What an honor. Again, with us is our own troubadour, Francisco Herrera. Francisco, you work with the day laborers, and you've been doing some serious organizing to protect the workers. Just give us tell us a few minutes about what you've been up to.
There's a very interesting thing happening around the nation, a campaign called Adopt a Corner, something that every neighbor can do. We are at 415-529-9675 is the office that holds a space where day laborers, domestic workers seek work, but also get organized to change policy. And this campaign throughout the country is happening where neighbors are coming together, identifying a vulnerable corner, like a place where day laborers find work, or a vulnerable space like a school, a church, and they're saying, you know what, I'm going to come to that corner, I'm going to bring food, I'm going to talk with those neighbors who are looking for work, I'm going to be ready and I'm going to be watching, just like Richard was talking about the folks on the bikes and watching if there is a violent attack by these kidnappers and terrorists who call themselves ICE. But it's beautiful, people coming together, and that's something everybody can do. It's a very important campaign of either hiring a day laborer, a domestic worker, to do very simple day work. It's completely legal because it's that day work, casual labor, it's called in the labor code. But more than anything, this coming together of folks looking out for people, going to the neighbor and saying, you're vulnerable, so I'll take your child to school as my neighbor. I'll pick her up at 3 in the afternoon. Because if a child is left in the school has to give that child over to the state for adoption. So folks are coming together to say, okay, I'll team up with you. You were neighbors. I know you. You know me. I'll make myself responsible. If something were to happen to you, I'll take your child and I'll make sure she comes back together with you. Our children are sacred. Nuestros niños son sagrados. Our children are beautiful. Bellos son. Our children are a gift. Son el regalo más amado. Our children are sacred. Sagrados son. So if you're interested in participating in this Adopt a Corner, call us at 415-529-9675. Our children are sacred. Nuestros niños son sagrados. Our children are beautiful. Bellos son. Our children are a gift. Son el regalo más amado. Our children are sacred. Sagrados son. And here they come. Eyes wide open to the violence we have caused. They come bearing gifts for a better tomorrow. Healing the sorrow, opening heart. Our children are sacred. Nuestros niños son sagrados. Our children are beautiful, bellas son. Our children are a gift, son el regalo más amado. Our children are sacred, sagrados son.
Oh, oh, they say. We are delighted and honored to have you beautiful performers. We love Code Pink, Cynthia Papermaster. We thank you, Gavilan, Richard Montoya, and of course, Mike Biggs, making this sound good at the board. To all of you, my heart appreciates it. I am, this moment, happy, very happy to be alive. Mm. And we're out of here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our
children are sacred. Oh, our children are sacred. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our children are sacred. Na 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 na. Our children are sacred. Oh yeah yeah. Our children are sacred. Our children are sacred.
Beautiful.
Our children are sacred.
Yeah yeah.
Our children are sacred.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from Grand Lodge Concerts, presenting a co-headlining